Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Fleeting Expletives Edition. Today our featured guest is Kirkland & Ellis partner Chris Landau, discussing FCC v. Fox television stations, heard in oral argument on Tuesday, November 4th. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the FCC's policy on the broadcast of vulgar words. The case arises from controversy over an omnibus order issued by the FCC in 2006 to punish broadcasters for even single uses of vulgar words, so-called fleeting expletives. This new order was prompted by several high-profile incidents of fleeting expletives at awards shows and represented a break from the FCC's long-standing policy, crafted in the wake of the 1975 case FCC v. Pacifica Foundation, to take action against broadcasters only for the repeated or sustained use of vulgar language. Although the new order was a notice of only apparent liability, with no corresponding punishment, Fox and other broadcasters petitioned for review by the Second Circuit, which struck the order down as an arbitrary and capricious deviation not allowed under federal communications law, but invited the agency to provide a, quote, reasonable explanation for changing its mind. Instead, the FCC appealed the case to the Supreme Court, which now considers whether the Second Circuit erred in striking down the FCC's new policy against fleeting expletives. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And, in the interests of full disclosure, Mr. Landau would like me to mention that he filed an amicus brief, in this case supporting the respondents. And now, Mr. Landau.
Hi, this is Chris Landau with a post-argument/pre-decision podcast on the Supreme Court case of FCC versus Fox television stations. Let me start out with the question presented. Quote, whether the Court of Appeals erred in striking down the Federal Communications Commission's determination that the broadcast of vulgar expletives may violate federal restrictions on the broadcast of any obscene, indecent, or profane language when the expletives are not repeated, unquote. There's an internal statutory cite there to 18 U.S.C. section 1464, which is a criminal statute that makes it a crime to utter any obscene, indecent, or profane language by means of radio communication, which also applies to TV. And the other statute in the background of this case is 47 U.S.C. section 503b1d, in which Congress authorized the FCC to impose forfeiture penalties or fines for violations of section 1464. That's been on the books since 1960. So this is, in other words, the so-called fleeting expletive case. I will certainly try in this podcast to avoid actually citing the expletives in question, but if your ears are very sensitive, I warn you this may not be the right podcast for you. To just, again, go to the background, this policy has been around, or this authority has been around since 1960. The FCC didn't authorize it until 1975 when it imposed a fine on Pacifica Radio for George Carlin's famous Filthy Words monologue. That case, as you may know, went all the way up to the Supreme Court and was upheld by a 5-4 vote, but really on rather narrow grounds. And the FCC continued to be rather cautious in its approach to Section 1464 for the following few decades. That changed a number of years ago, and it's not clear if that changed because the use of vulgarity on TV increased or people got more sensitive and started writing in more. It's one of the issues in the case, kind of what's new. But certainly there was a spate of incidents earlier this decade that's at issue here. The key ones for present purposes all come from award shows. In January 2003 at the Golden Globe Awards, after Bono, the noted musician and humanitarian, won an award, he said, "This is really, really effing brilliant." Although Bono was not quite as restrained as I just was in his use of language. Similarly, at the 2002 Billboard Awards, Cher had the following to say. "People have been telling me I'm on the way out every year, right? So, F them." Okay, and at the 2003 Billboard Award, not to be outdone, Nicole Richie asked this rhetorical question. "Have you ever tried to get cow S out of a Prada purse? It's not so effing simple," unquote. So the FCC received complaints about these use of vulgarity and issued orders in each of these cases saying that these were violations of Section 1464, but in all these cases declined to impose any monetary penalties on the ground that this had not been clearly established before, that this kind of fleeting use of an expletive, in other words, it's not something that was clearly scripted and not repeated, but just a kind of a single use of a bad word was a violation of the section. In particular, the policy that comes out of these orders really has two main components. First, that any use of the F or S words is per se indecent, that those words necessarily have a sexual or excretory connotation, and that's kind of regardless of the context in which they're used. And second, that even the fleeting or single use of either of those words can bring a penalty, that, again, the commission was not going to require repeated use. But the commission did announce a number of exceptions, including bona fide in news reports and the use of these words in situations where they are, quote, integral to the work, such as the movie Saving Private Ryan. Anyway, notwithstanding the absence of a penalty, the networks took these orders up to the Second Circuit, and in a divided decision, a panel of the Second Circuit vacated the orders and sent it back to the agency for further explanation, said these were arbitrary and capricious, in two particular ways. First, that there was no reasoned explanation given for the agency's abandoning of its prior, more restrained approach, that nothing had obviously changed, and therefore the agency really needed to justify itself. And second, the court said that this new policy is arbitrary and capricious because it appears to allow some uses of the F and S words, but not others, and that that distinction was not sufficiently well articulated and explained. And the court went on to say then, well, even though we're sending this back to the commission, let us basically give you some useful dicta that will be helpful to you on remand, and basically suggested that this was unconstitutional to have a policy that tried to draw any lines in this area between various uses of these kinds of words, and in a sense suggested that either you ban everything or you ban nothing. The government certainly took the Second Circuit's opinion that way, notwithstanding the fact that the case was being remanded to the agency for further proceedings. It took the case to the Supreme Court saying, you guys should decide this issue, it's really important, and we're basically in a box in light of the Second Circuit's decision because we can't satisfy the court's constitutional concerns except by banning all uses of these words or banning none. And we can't ban all of them. We don't even want to ban all of them, and the court really has put us in this terrible all-or-nothing box. The government certainly emphasized the Second Circuit's constitutional discussion as well as its administrative law discussion. And lots of amicus briefs were filed on both sides of the case. The argument took place on November 4th on Election Day, and the government was represented by Solicitor General Greg Garr. The networks were represented by Carter Phillips from Sidley and Austin. Just briefly to discuss some of the issues that came up at argument, again, in Supreme Court arguments, there is no sense in trying to predict what any questions mean or how the court is going to go, and certainly I'm not going to have my voice recorded on a podcast making any such predictions with which I can subsequently be mocked mercilessly. So, again, take any suggestions that you may infer from this discussion with a grain of salt. Justice Scalia, Justice Kennedy, and Justice Souter asked both sides really kind of pressed them on, is there a change in the FCC's policy? And the FCC, as the Solicitor General was forced to concede, had been less than clear on the issue whether or not this fleeting expletive policy in these most recent orders really reflected a change from the Commission's prior practice or a continuation of the prior practice. And the orders seem to point in somewhat inconsistent directions on that score, which is the kind of thing that can get an agency in trouble under arbitrary and capricious review. The Chief Justice kept raising the question, well, does it really matter whether it's changed or not? Isn't the ultimate question the same, regardless of whether it's a new policy or whether it's an old policy, just whether or not the policy that's there is justified? And in a sense, he certainly seemed to suggest that it kind of made less difference whether the agency acknowledged it was a change or not, on which there was some, as I said, some confusion and lack of agreement. The chief had some questions about the news exception and raised an interesting hypothetical about what if there was a news report on the Cher or Nicole Richie statements, would it be obscene or vulgar, indecent for those statements to be repeated in the context of a news report, to which the Solicitor General unequivocally answered, no, that would not be a problem, that the news exception is categorical. So they obviously made a decision from an advocacy perspective to just take a very bright line on the news exception, and, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. Justice Stevens raised some questions about whether the F-word has an invariable sexual connotation and kind of suggested that in his view it didn't necessarily. But Justice Scalia and the Chief Justice both seemed to have a different view on that issue and said, look, that's what really gives the word its force. At the end of the day, even if it's not used in a sexual context, that it is the inherently sexual nature of the thing that makes it worse in a sense or different than other bad words. There was some discussion, although not much, about kind of the big legal question lurking here, which is whether the Red Lion Doctrine, under which regulations of broadcasting get less scrutiny than regulations of other forms of communication, other media, is still good law. That didn't really seem to get any traction. Nobody was really asking the court to overrule or change the basic rules of the road. So if there winds up being any discussion of that in one or more opinions, that was not something that certainly made a splash at argument. Justice Breyer had a lot of practical questions, particularly concerning the use of bleepers in terms of just how this policy could be enforced. Was it that hard to enforce it? How many people did you need to have bleeping? Was that really such a burden? And it came out certainly that it's hard to generalize the answer to that because there are both the big national networks, but then there's even small local broadcasters who are faced with this situation. Certainly what a major network can do in terms of deploying an army of bleepers may not be the same as a small local network, but certainly Breyer was very much coming at it from a practical perspective. There was an interesting discussion when Carter Phillips suggested that the administrative law standard for arbitrary and capricious review should be more demanding in First Amendment cases. You know, he kept saying this is not your plain vanilla electrical utility regulation kind of administrative action. This is about the regulation of speech. And Justice Scalia and the Chief Justice kind of perked up at that point and said, look, doesn't that create a Vermont Yankee problem that we're not free to add particular additional procedures to those set forth in the APA? Basically, coming up with a hard look doctrine in the First Amendment context would be anathema to kind of those settled principles of administrative law that the APA is what it is. Carter Phillips really stressed the interorum effects of a somewhat open-ended contextual analysis that basically nobody could be sure where they would stand under a kind of regime of we know it when we see it. And again, it remains to be seen how that will play out. Justice Ginsburg, at the conclusion of both parties' arguments, raised some questions about what issues really presented in the case. And I think that will be very interesting to see how that plays itself out. Certainly, after raising constitutional issues in its cert petition, the government flipped in its merits briefing and said, this is a plain vanilla administrative law case. The Second Circuit went way out of bounds by saying this was arbitrary and capricious, and it is not. And you don't need to really think about the Constitution at all. That was all dicta in the Second Circuit. The broadcasters and their amici, and by the way, I wrote one amicus brief supporting the broadcaster's position, so full disclosure on that. But the broadcasters basically said, look, you really cannot ignore the elephant in the room, which is these constitutional questions, and certainly in applying the APA, you should keep that in mind. So it will be very interesting to see the extent to which this winds up being an administrative law precedent and to what extent the court lets the First Amendment concerns that are basically underlying the administrative issues here really come out in its decision. All in all, certainly a very entertaining argument. Lots of media speculation about whether the S or F word would be uttered in the August courtroom, and I can report that they were not. And I think I managed to get through this podcast without repeating them here either. I hope it's been useful and interesting, and certainly we'll all look forward to a decision. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.